This episode of Forging Worlds contains frank discussion of pregnancy, birth, infant death, and has strong language. Listener discretion is advised. Hey everybody, welcome to Forging Worlds. I'm Alan.
I'm Matt, and we are back.
Woo!
I know it's been a hot minute. Oops, life happened. Are very, very bad.
Oops, we did it. For the first time.
Yeah. Here's the deal. Originally, when I kind of pitched this idea to Alan, it was like, limited run series. We put it out whenever. And as it turns out, when you say to the two of us, put things out whenever, it translates to nothing goes out for months.
Yep. Because we operate on deadlines.
And so we gave ourselves a deadline, starting with this world. So the entire month of April...
Plus, I do think it should be said that the reaction from you guys was overwhelmingly positive. Honestly, we weren't sure that anybody would take to this, so it was kind of an experiment. We're super excited that so many people seem to really like hearing us blather about world building, and so that kind of fuels us to continue.
Yeah. So, like I said, we gave ourselves deadlines now. Here's the new Forging World schedule starting April 5th today, the day you're hearing this today. Every Thursday, our Thursdays are now our release days. Every other month, starting this month, every week, we're going to release an episode, of our current world. So in April, the world we're going to start today is going to release all four Thursdays this month. Then in the off month, so May, we're going to do two episodes on Thursdays. Kind of every other Thursday, that will be our downtime episodes. It'll be like a From the Atlas or a Building Blocks or one that we're considering doing kind of a Q&A for the two of us that we're calling Mastering Your World. I think we have at least one question so far on our Twitter, hashtag about that. Yeah. But we'll let y'all know well in advance if that's one that we're going to do so you can send in questions. And then in June, we'll be back to doing a full world on every Thursday. So, one, we hope that having these deadlines will mean Alan and I will put out more content for you. And two, I know people like having regular stuff show up. And, like, every other show that I do here in the Fifth Draw family has shifted to monthly. So, sorry? Here's this thing, though.
But to be fair, the Fifth Draw family is expanding, which I think we can kind of excitedly talk about. You know, the Lost Library has... been coming out. By this time, you'll have both of the character introduction episodes, I believe, for you to check out. And that campaign is called Grayscale. And should I use this platform to announce the other release?
Sure. Why not? I don't think anyone else has heard about it yet. We've just kind of hinted.
I don't think so. So you may have seen on Twitter that I have been talking about Secret Project M. It will be a part of the Fifth Draw family, specifically in the Lost Library. And I'm calling it Mistborn. Dissonant Harmonies. So it is the Mistborn RPG. Matt is actually in the game.
Woo!
It's a lot of fun. It's set in the Alloy of Law era. So basically Wild West steampunk with metal magic. And I'm very, very excited to be bringing that to you. The win, we're still working on that. We've got one episode in the can. We've got another date to record soon, but we're not going to release for a little while yet.
We've got an idea. We're kind of shooting for summer, but that'll depend on schedules. Once we have a good backlog is when Alan wants to, that's when Alan's going to be ready to release. And I am, since I'm like hosting Lost Library and I want to bring in people on like this, like I'm fine with that. Like I want him to be ready to jump on this and run with it. So I'm super excited for y'all to hear this. I play just the worst person.
He does.
He's a very bad boy, but I like him. So that's Forging World's new release schedule. Thursdays moving forward. And this month you should get four episodes from us. So
with that being said, let's dive into the world that we're going to be talking about. Before we hit the record button, we did some random number generating to get our genre and our modifier.
Yes.
And I'll say the genre, Matt, if you want to jump in with the modifier. The genre this month is dark fantasy.
And let's talk about that real fast before we hit the modifier. So dark fantasy, Alan and I kind of had this conversation. This is like gothic kind of romance-y kind of on one hand. Think like the Underworld series is a good example of this.
Interview with a Vampire.
Yeah, the Anne Rice books are a good example of this. What it is horror and dark fantasy are two sides of the same coin in a lot of ways. Horror is the first Alien movie, where every time the crew of the Nostromo comes up with a plan, it fails and someone dies. Sigourney Weaver's character, Ripley, only gets out mainly through luck. Like, skill on her part, but also luck. Like, she managed to react to the aliens at the right time, blah, 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 blah. Y'all have seen Alien. If you haven't, go watch it. It's great.
It is a good movie.
Dark Fantasy is Aliens, the second movie in the series, where Ripley gets dropped onto a planet with a platoon of Marines, and she's able to kind of tell them what's going on. Like, a lot of them still die, a lot of plans still don't work, but you're prepared for it, and you stand a chance. Like, plans can work.
Exactly.
So that's the genre. The modifier, now when we talk about modifiers, what we mean is kind of like some constraints of the world. We have things on here like high school and some other things like along that lines. It's just kind of like a twist of the genre a little bit.
The way I look at it is it's a compass point. It's the thing that, because otherwise we could go in any direction with any of this. And the way I've always liked to think of it, it's like putting a kid in front of a wall of candy. When there are so many choices, they become frozen with indecision. So what the modifier does is it helps us narrow that down to maybe three different types of candy. So we can figure out what direction we want to go within this overarching thing.
And the nice thing is it also gives us like something that's an established fact about the world we're building. So like it gives us a base to jump off of. But it also sometimes, and I think this month is a good example of it, it gives us some questions to answer.
Mm-hmm.
So without any further blathering on about it, our modifier was aerial. So the entire thing takes place in the sky.
You now have Aerials by System of a Down stuck in your head. You're welcome.
I don't. I'm music dumb.
It's a very good song.
So, that's the world we're going to be creating, an aerial dark fantasy. And we're also trying out a little bit shorter recording time. We're doing 45-minute chunks instead of an hour. So, Alan, are you ready?
Ready.
All right. And timer starts now.
Okay, so first question, how did they get into the sky, and who is in the sky?
I don't know if that's the first question.
Ooh, what's your first question?
My first question is, what does this look like? See, what I'm picturing is like separate floating cities almost. Like imagine an entire gothic city got ripped up out of the earth and is now in the air. So there's like old cathedrals, castles,
yes, manors, absolutely,
villages, all connected by like bridges and cables and everything, kind of holding them together. And that's happened in a bunch of different places so we can get a bunch of different visuals.
Oh, 100%. And And it may just be easier for us to use Earth as a base point, but I like this being so far removed that it's no longer thought of as Earth. If we do that,
I don't even know if we need to call this Earth. Like, I think there's enough other places that are like parallel development, or at least similar by whatever force does it. The Magic the Gathering universe, multiverse, where you can hop between planes. There's a lot of things that are very similar. A whole bunch of them have elves. A whole bunch of them have merfolk. A lot of the building designs are similar, but also are, like, culturally different. So mm-hmm. I'm kind of picturing that, where there's a lot of similar horror gothic creatures here and designs, and Alan just had a really good idea.
The core is exposed. The planet blew up.
Oh, so I love that.
A lot of the actual, like, earth part, like the earthen dirt and what have you, the mantle and the crust, have kind of shuffled off. So literally these cities are floating over an abyss that looks down into the dying embers of a planet.
Oh, I love that so much. Oh, that's perfect. I love it. Okay, so then this raises a couple questions. What is left? Like, I know I said a city, but I imagine there's a lot more than that, like scattered around a bunch of different communities.
Oh, for sure.
I'm also picturing some land masses, like whatever magic, divine intervention, technology, whatever saved these things, or maybe whatever triggered this apocalypse and left this behind, was a little bit like hit and miss with it. So it caught like this city, sure, but it also caught this big haunted, spooky forest.
Oh, for sure. I also like the idea of, and I think we went into this a little bit in Crystallum, but I love the imagery of waterfalls into nothing.
Primus a little bit, actually, yeah.
Primus, that's what it was. Not Crystallum, but Primus. But I'd love it if there was like an ocean. Like just a chunk of the ocean that got ripped up and that has like been draining for God knows how long, and just has like rivulets of water running off the sides of it as the creatures that live within it have had to adapt to, instead of having a boundless ocean, all of the sudden their ocean has walls, and those walls are constantly shrinking.
I like that a lot. I think one thing we need to kind of establish first is, like, for in the event of an apocalypse, please maintain your atmospheric quality for continuation of life. Whatever did this, like, there's still an atmosphere. So I don't know if, like, the rest of the Earth sloughed away, or if the rest of all of the actual physical Earth, minus the core, was made to go away.
So the thing that has popped into my head is twin deities, or twin forces. Creation and destruction. They live in balance. Destruction maybe was summoned by some idiot on the planet, or like something happened that allowed destruction to break out of the careful cosmic balance that was there. And so it destroyed most of the planet, but then its twin swept in and said, okay, what isn't destroyed, I am going to preserve. I'm going to keep the atmosphere here. I'm going to allow these beings to continue to live as a screw you to their twin.
I like the concept there. I want to offer a modification.
Please do.
Just to kind of distance ourselves from warring gods, which we've kind of touched on a couple times, I think. So let's imagine these two forces, whatever they are, we can call them creation, destruction. Who cares? That happened. You know, some force did this, and destruction swept over, and then a creation force, or like a life-giving force, whatever, swept in and preserved the world as it was, like managed to retain the atmosphere, keep everything floating kind of roughly where they had been, and preserve these biomes.
They're the same creature. They're the same force. They're not at war. They are the same.
I like them being at war because I don't think it matters, because they're gone. Whatever this is these two things, or this one thing, is rampaging across the universe. Mm-hmm. It hit this world, and it is long gone.
Yeah.
And this is centuries later, so sure, there's mythology about it. You know, some people say it's two, some people say it's one, some people say it's nothing, some people say it's a wizard.
Competing mythologies, I love it.
Yeah, so that gives us a basis for religion and everything, but it's gone, it's moved on across the cosmos, and is never coming back. So it did this, so we have a perfect planet still, like, in terms of atmosphere quality and everything.
And
gravity is still working.
Physics. But,
yeah, physics is still working despite most of the landmass of this planet being just, who knows, folded into a pocket dimension. Don't hit it in hyperspace. That was a very specific joke for
Animorphs.
People.
And it was Z-Space, but I'll forgive you.
It's still hyperspace, whatever. Yeah. Okay, so that's very, very interesting. Let's talk about...
Here's the other thing that I like about that. I don't want there to be gods. Mm-mm. Because one of the big tropes in dark fantasy is that the people have been abandoned or forsaken. Like, there's a sense of loneliness and isolation that I think dark fantasy captures very well. And I kind of want that for our world. Maybe they're not isolated from each other, but their world is cut off. Like, there's no gods coming to save them. There's no nothing. When that core dies,
That's it.
Because they know, like, their magiscience or whatever we decide it is, has determined that once that core dies, whatever is holding the physics of this realm together die with it, and then everything dies.
I like that. Okay, I think the other thing we need to, like, I want to get back to the world at some point, but I think first what we need to talk about is who's here.
Mm-hmm.
I think for ease of, not communication, but for ease of just, like, identification, mostly human?
Yes.
Or humanoform,
whatever. Humanoform.
Yeah.
Because I have a stupid idea.
Oh, you want Fae, don't you?
No. Yes, but no.
Go ahead.
Look, Fae make everything better, in my opinion, but, you know, that's just me. So when the planet shifted or exploded or whatever happened to it, there was a shelf that wound up underneath another continent. So basically, that piece of land is forever in darkness.
Okay.
And vampires arose.
Oh, absolutely. Like, I don't. I'm sorry. I did not make myself clear. This is 100% vampires and werewolves and humans.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. But,
like,
this is.
That's their city. Like, that is their home base. Because it is perpetual night. The sun never rises there because it's always in the shadows. You can never see the stars. When you look up, it's just black because it's the bottom of another continent, essentially.
Oh, Alan, but you can see stars. What you see is lights from the buildings that have been built on the underside of the top continent. I love that. That is absolutely the vampire homeworld, is that bottom shelf of something. That gave me a very dumb idea. So let's put fae creatures in here, but we're going to do it mostly just like the she. So the human looking, like, ultra beautiful, the ones who can do glamours, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's the ones we include. Like, a lot of the other things we can, pocket cases. They may be there, they may not. I don't know if we need to determine. The she, as a group, live on what is now the moon, which is a plate that had been ripped off of the planet.
Yeah.
So it has a side that faces the sun. Like, it's got a, it's tidally locked. So it's got, like, its constant sun-facing side where the she live. And on the other side are the unshi. So we have the dark elves and the light elves. Or the summer and the winter, whatever.
Yeah, let's go with summer and winter. Because I like a couple things. I love the flipping of visual concept there. But I always also hate that just, like, if they have dark skin, they're evil. So, like, Drow has always bothered me that their skin's, like, black or, like, gray. But what I think would be cool is that the she are very, very tan. They're very beautiful and, you know, very tan. But the unshi are pale and luminescent, and, you know, they're both beautiful, but in very different ways. The unshi are more delicate. The she are hardier.
I like that a lot. This also allows us to
Can they also just be friends? Like, can they not hate each other?
I think yes, because they're not on the planet anymore. They're not tied to the seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Like, whatever did, like, freed them from the necessity to be constantly opposing each other.
I mean, there's still some of that, but I like that maybe
the really old ones are still just like, yeah, fuck a she.
Like, kind of make it a little bit of a mirror to our world right now. The older generation is still kind of xenophobic, racist, you know, whatever. But the younger folks are like, hey, you know what's stupid? All that.
Yeah.
All of that right there is real stupid. Because we're the same.
There's definitely some she kids who are just like, we live on the moon now. We don't get to have this fight anymore. We can move on. So I think what this also does for us is this, since we already decided no gods, this lets us have a substitute for angels and demons that sometimes show up in this dark fantasy thing,
mm-hmm.
where we have she and unshi, who can kind of fill that role, because unshi by nature are still more cold and more not evil, but
logical,
malicious a little bit. Like they're less about mischievous is good. I love the Dresden Files description of this, where Winter is not evil. You know, Mab is not evil.
Mm-hmm.
Mab has a purpose. Her purpose is cold, calculating, logical, very much sociopathic. It's just like, I am doing what I'm doing for the continuation of life. Yep. And the other side...
And because I hate my sister.
Also that. The other side is, you know, the Summer She, who are just like, la-di-da, life goes on. They're a little bit more carefree and less concerned with, like, the big picture kind of deal.
And that also gives us the ability for role reversal, which is always a ton of fun. So yeah. An Unshi showing up somewhere and then being like, oh, what are you here to do? Torment me? And it's like, no, I'm here to help you. Like,
I heard time, my dude.
Yeah, I heard that, like, I heard your prayer and I heard that you needed some help. So here I am.
Yeah, I like that a lot. Okay, so we have vampires and we have the Shi. Let's talk about the wolfies.
I was going to say the gill people, but let's talk about the wolfies.
Okay, let's talk about the wolfies. We'll get to our swamp things. So we got werewolves. I mean, we just established that there is some form of moon, or at least a continental plate that is acting as such, probably in low orbit.
The problem that I have with introducing a werewolf into this, and it can be easily rectified, I think. But it kills me when I'm reading a werewolf story or I'm running something and either the lunar cycle is the most important thing in the world or it's non-existent. Typically, I go for non-existent simply because it's a lot to keep track of. I'm okay with it being here. It's just we have to determine how do phases of the moon work in this particular timeline, or are we going to just say these are werewolves in that they are people who are lupine, not like anthropomorphic, but can maybe willingly adopt the features of a wolf when it suits them?
I'd say let's kind of blend those two, where it's like an adolescent thing. You start off and you just look like a normal kid.
Yeah.
And when you hit puberty, suddenly that rhythm is tied to the circadian rhythm of the planet, and you do have those times when you're just like involuntarily shift. But when you get done with that, and like the elders, we'll get to that in a second, when like the elders, like can those older than you can coach you through it, then you can do it voluntarily. When you're like, oh wait, no, I just like twitch this muscle and I'm good. Like kind of thing. Like it's a control thing more than a tied to the cycle. The cycle is what kicks it off and initially controls it, but that's not what determines it.
And the other thing that I like about them having some control is it also allows for like, if they're on the hunt, then they can go full lupine. But like, let's say that one of their children is lost in the forest. They can just use like lupine out their nose or their ears so that they get enhanced hearing or enhanced smell. Or even if they just want to play, you know, I always also see werewolves as usually very either stoic or just mean. I want there to be like, could these be werewolves, but like were golden retrievers where they're just a happy people?
Yeah, I think we need to allow for that in there. And that brings me to what I wanted to add to this. I don't want these to be like wilder people. I don't want these to be like...
No, they're very civilized.
Yeah, I want these to be like...
Could this be our technology like centers, maybe?
Maybe?
Because I almost see the vampires as more shamanistic since they live longer. So like they are the keepers of the histories and the old traditions.
I like that, but I also kind of see the vampires a little bit as a little bit more feral since they developed like potentially after this happened.
Yeah.
And maybe they were like a corruption of whatever ability allows the werewolves.
I like that because a lot of the times you get it reversed where werewolves are feral and vampires are very like high and snooty. Yeah,
I want that kind of reversal. So what if the werewolves have been around for a long time and they're just maybe not accepted in human society, but like tolerated. So they have their own cities and everything.
Like, let's not go with the curse can be passed by bite or whatever, but you can become a were-creature if you want to. Like, they can go through a special ritual if they wanted to, like, if a normal human wanted to join were society, there is a ritual that can be performed by the elders after they've, like, gone through some stuff to say, hey, I really want to do this, this is important to me, you know, blah, 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 and then they can be incorporated into were society. But I want werewolves to be normal. Just like, oh yeah, you're cool. Because they're always, always, always shunned.
I get where you're coming from, and I don't know that dark fantasy is a place for that.
Yeah, that's true too.
Like, that's kind of the downside of the genre constraint is it kind of, there has to be tension between human and werewolf and vampire and she.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that tension has to exist all the way around.
And kill people.
Yeah, I know you're going to make sure those are here.
Look, I like more people, okay?
I like the idea of there being a ritual. I think that ritual needs to go both ways. That
yes, I like that a lot,
too. A kid born into where society needs to be able to not, if they don't want to. I feel like there has to be stakes to that. Like, if you make that choice... That choice is made. You can't just go back and forth. Like, it takes a toll on your body or your soul or something.
No, I got an idea, because I think this is some dark fantasy shit.
Oh, good.
You have to be unborn. So what happens is it is a ritual that basically takes your soul and puts it inside of the womb of another, like, of a mother.
Ooh.
And you are reborn into that society.
Oh.
It's squicky, but it's also very dark fantasy.
Is there a way we can do that without being tied to birth? Like, that hits a lot of squick buttons on me that I don't like. Is there a way we can do it where it has to be, like, either a were and a human have to both voluntarily switch? Almost like a full transfusion or something, or... Or otherwise you have to have someone sacrifice, like an older were sacrifice for the human, or...
There has to be the price of blood.
Yeah. Like, that unborn thing is cool, but, that hits me wrong. Like, because that...
And that's totally fine.
It feels like that loses, like... Because then what you're... Like, do they come out as just, like, themselves again? As, like... fully formed, or do they start over? Because that's a high price, and that's a long, I don't want to say delivery on the promise, but because that's a bad joke in the current situation.
But I think that's because I want the price to be high, and I want the price to be costly.
Mm-hmm.
And even, you know, if we did go with that you don't live a full life. Like, you were 30 when you decided to do this, then you have 30 years removed from you when you go through this process. Like, you have, like, and maybe not unbirth, but the idea of starting over.
I like that. And I think, okay. Let's get a little weird with it. Let's kind of find a middle ground here.
You mean weirder than unbirth?
Not weirder, maybe equally weird on some planes. Okay. So, okay. This might be crossing some lines and hitting some buttons and triggers for people, and I apologize. Stillbirth is a thing. It exists. It's very, very sad and very costly and very traumatic. What if that's the price? Like, a newly stillborn of the side you're trying to get to.
Ooh, and your spirit is transferred into it.
Yeah, so your body dies, and that's also, like... that many years, you've lived them, your spirit cannot progress past the number that was kind of set by the fates, or whatever kind of, like, instrument that is, and you have to maybe not start over, like, the body you're in will accelerate growth somehow.
Yeah, it will rapidly age. I like that. I don't like the stillborn thing.
Yeah, I don't know how else to, like...
Well, I mean, it's dark fantasy. There's blood magic.
Ooh, so it just creates you a new body.
Basically. So let's kind of combine both of our ideas. So maybe through blood sacrifice, by you letting your blood out, basically to the point of death, from your blood, they then, like, add in wear blood. Like, they bleed you until you die, almost. They have your blood, then they add in stuff you have to make have a sponsor. You wear.
You have to add a. You have to have a sponsor.
Yes.
Someone who's gonna basically like you're be gonna your be parent. Part of their family. Yeah. They're responsible for you and everything, and they have to be at a certain age.
Yep.
And some sort of age of responsibility.
And they have to donate some blood, which will either turn a human into a were or a were into a human.
Yeah.
And once the spell is cast, out of the blood, like because all the blood is like in a tub. Out of the blood comes a baby, and that baby... Or
a body of some sort, yeah.
Well, I like the idea of it being a baby, because again, the cost is high. So you have to go through everything that that person... Now, at an accelerated rate. Like, we could say that within 5 years' time, they're back to where they were. They're back to, like, their early 20s, and then they slow down and age normally.
I want to shorten that down even more to like maybe like a month, but it is excruciating.
Yeah, it's super painful because you're growing and changing. And then not only that, but you have to learn all the new mores and taboos of this new society that you thought you knew. But God, there are secrets.
Yeah,
there's always secrets.
And I think it is important right now to also say neither of us are trans individuals. And if this is...
Yes.
Hitting you wrong, that is not our intention, and we are very sorry. Please let us know, and we will fix it.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah. I realized after we got through that we were kind of treading on some ground there. But I think the core concept of that, of being able to change one way or the other, is good. Maybe not our execution of it. That remains to be seen. So let's move on a little bit. We need to address one last thing in the time that's kind of coming close to winding down. We got about 18 minutes left. Okay, so Alan, I know you want them in here, so tell me about your guild dudes.
Give me my good fish people. So I definitely want there to be merfolk.
Okay, whoa. Merfolk or gillmen?
Merfolk.
Are they swamp things or merfolk?
Merfolk.
Okay.
Like, okay, so swamp things are cool, but I like the idea of, like, more mer people. You know, I particularly, when I talk about merpeople, one of the first things I automatically go to are the Zora from The Legend of Zelda. Specifically in the newest, in Breath of the Wild, where they had, like, the manta Zora, and you had, like, the shark, and, you know, you could see the oceanic influences and, like, what they were trying to go for.
Uh-huh.
So, like, in the process of this happening, when, you know, whatever force did it swept through to fix everything, it gave sea creatures sentience. And then in the time since that's happened, like, they have formed communities, but they've also evolved some beyond what they used to be. And they are evolving at a rapid, accelerated rate because of the force that changed them.
Okay. I dig that a lot.
So they went from mindless animals to being able to have, you know, at the very least, tribes within a few years. And now I'm thinking they're close to organized cities, but their water is running out. So it's getting dangerous.
Okay. I like this. And I like that they're maybe at, like, copper age technology, so, mm-hmm. like, Greek city-states in the ancient, in antiquity.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. On the ocean thing, here's what I'm picturing, is that it was just, like, maybe, like, a massive basin or two mm-hmm. in a couple different places, and that a lot of that water is draining off, but what has started to show up is, like, some of those terrain details.
Mm-hmm.
have walled it off, so there are now just eternal
pools,
maybe even like
giant
great
pools.
Lakes, Great Lakes size lakes now.
I was thinking even bigger, like go with the Dead Sea.
Okay, so something really massive.
Yeah.
The other thing I want to do is, because the atmosphere works, and as far as we've established, it works as intended, there's still a rain cycle. So a lot of that water that's fallen, that's drained off,
Yeah.
Is evaporating when it hits the core and coming back up. And maybe not all of it's making it up. Maybe there's like a rain belt like halfway down, which could be an interesting thing to play with. Okay. We're coming back to that. So that just gave me a good idea. We're
the coming rain back belt?
Yes. We're cool. coming back to that. But a lot of this is coming back up and is raining and refilling. So once they get down to this like super lake basin in each of these areas, it's going to maintain. So they're not at risk. It's just they're going to have to adapt and learn to leave the water, or they're just stuck here and are going to stagnate with this water over time.
I think that's fascinating. Can I throw in another piece?
Absolutely.
There is a mountain that has risen in the middle of the water.
Okay.
So
somewhere,
like,
yeah.
So basically where they were when this thing happened, it was basically just a giant spike that had been eroded down and it looked kind of like a tower.
Okay.
But now that the water has drained some, that mountain is kind of out. And that's where the Mer people are making their home base, is within that mountain. And because it's so close to the surface, some of them are almost pulling a little bit of an aerial, being like, hey, what's up there? You know, how do we interact with it? How do we adapt to it? You know, like that question is starting to be thrown around, even though they don't have the technology yet to do that. Does that make sense?
Okay. So maybe in a further couple hundred years or so, if the core survives, they could eventually like borrow an airship from a human city and transplant to some of these other lakes.
Exactly.
Okay. I like that a lot. I like the possibility of that. And that also gives us like, I know we said the vampires are going to be, we need to address vampires here in a minute because I think we have a contradiction going on. But I like that these are kind of like, these are our kingdom types. Like the rest of these are in kingdoms as well, but this is more like medieval kingdom where they literally require this city, this environment to live in. They don't have the technology to move forward. I like that a lot. Let's talk about vampires because, like I said, I think we have a contradiction going on here.
I like what you are throwing out more than what I had thrown out. I like that they are feral. I like that they are more wild and like they don't like to leave their home plane because. And we can say the whole, you know, why they can't stand sunlight is that because they've lived in shadow so long, like they literally can't, like if the sun touches them, it causes them intense physical pain. And if they stay in it too long, like their skin is almost transparent, like it does damage to their organs.
I like that. I like, because they were born in darkness.
Yeah, they were like, born in darkness. They've lived in darkness for untold generations. But with that darkness.
Not untold.
Well, to them, untold, maybe, because they don't keep records. They're feral. They don't care. They exist to eat. Which means we have to give them something to hunt.
Let's dig in on this a minute here. Let's dig in here and look at this, because I think you stumbled onto something there, maybe intentionally. Untold generations, what if they've always been below the surface?
Yeah.
And, like, they have crept up at night. They had some tunnels. They have crept up at night and preyed on humans and werewolves and she. But also, maybe there is a pocket of them that had evolved a little bit. They're still very much like feral, very tribal, but they have a little bit more like, they're still wild, not feral. I think that's the distinction I'm trying to make. And they had gone up at some, and maybe this is even like ancient history to the vampires as a group. They had gone up and they had captured a bunch of different children from an area and they brought them down and they have basically like feral humans that once they reach a certain age, they just kill. Or they move over to, like, a reproduction area or something. And they're treated like cattle.
Yeah.
So there's... I don't...
That
I don't have a good way to say it.
Dark fantasy to me.
I like it. And what it's almost done is given us, like, two groups of humans.
I think it's important for us to note to the listeners, one of the things that we didn't talk about with dark fantasy, gothic, romance, and right on the edge of squicky. Like, it's just... It's supposed, and this is in defense of dark fantasy, I think it is supposed to make you slightly uncomfortable when you are experiencing it or reading it or questioning it, because it's designed to make you ask questions.
Yeah, like, it's all metaphor in a way, too. Like, this is like, when people are in literature with dark fantasy, when they're talking about a vampire, they're not always talking, like, the origin of that is not a vampire. It's, mm-hmm. like, it's non-consensual sexuality. Or it's sexuality run amok. Like, it's...
Yeah, it is fear your sexuality. This is what could happen to you. You know, that's why a lot of these tales are aimed at women, talking about, like, how a vampire can mesmerize you and do all of this stuff, because it was stories made up so that women would not have agency over their own bodies.
And it's also, you know, kind of, like, cautionary, and it's the worst and most base of human nature, is kind of the deal.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's, like, nowadays, yes, it has turned into something entirely other. Especially vampires.
Yeah.
But the origin of it is very much just, like, cautionary and, like Alan said, fear-mongering. So I think bringing some of that in is okay and appropriate.
And justified.
Yeah. So I like this idea that the vampires have maybe taken some people over the generations, and there is a second type of human now living just completely in the dark.
And I mean, I think it could also give, because funny that you brought up Animorphs, because I'm going to bring it up again. So there's an alien race in the Animorphs called the Hort-Vizier, and they are essentially a race of walking knives. Like, they have blades all over their bodies, but they are used by the Yurks for enforcement. Like, they're extremely violent when the Yurks control them, but in reality, they use those blades to peel the bark off trees, and they're actually, like, real chill and kind of dumb. What if we kind of pulled a reverse on that, or similar to, that maybe there are some vampiric children who are born that have a higher reasoning capacity than their elders do, and can kind of look at what the vampire culture is doing and say, hey, maybe it's not cool that we are rounding up these people that are obviously sentient, and, you know, maybe we should do something about that. And I think that would be an interesting story hook.
I like that idea that there is a pocket that has maybe even slowly climbed back to where this ancient vampire civilization had been at.
Mm-hmm.
Except they're not still tied to the predation. And I think part of that, as uncomfortable as this might sound, is because they have a steady supply of food available to them. And some of them are starting to question it, but this is still, I think these guys are still got, they need to be in the same kind of place as the Myrrh. So they're still antiquity, still kind of,
okay,
maybe not Copper Age, maybe Bronze Age.
So they're the only civilizations that actually, like, have technology...
Human and Ware.
Human and Ware. And she.
And yes, but I don't... We're going to need to decide, and this might be next episode, but we're going to need to decide what... if that's tech or magic.
True. And we also need to decide who's at war, because it's not dark fantasy without a war.
It's true. So let's... Any other race we need to talk about right now? Like, I think we've got them all, right? Do we have anything else we need to, like, snap include here?
Are there other fairy folk that we want to throw in?
I think a lot of that is just kind of up in the air. Like, there can definitely be, like, fairy tale creatures. So we might have some mm-hmm. gremlins or kobolds or things like that running around. But I don't know if they need an inclusion at this stage, because I don't know if they're, like, a sentient group or if they're just more sapient or...
Yeah, and servants of the she or the unshe.
Or even just, like, forest spirits of a sort. Like, maybe they are, like, tribal, but they're not necessarily fully sentient. That sounds like a weird path to roll down. But maybe?
Maybe. I also like
that they kobolds are still great, but...
I like also the idea that maybe they can function as emissaries.
Okay.
So, like, if the she wants something done, but they don't want to go themselves, or they have a meeting, or, you know, like, they feel that their presence needs to be known, instead of sending a she, they send a centaur, or they send a unicorn, or they send something else that serves as an emissary for them.
Okay. I like that, but I think then definitely we need to keep to the more fairy tale side of it. So not centaur or unicorn necessarily, but like kobolds or gnomes or things like that.
Okay.
But I like that a lot. So do we like, I think this might be the next question is before our time completely runs out on us today. Is there more than one moon with she on it? Because we said they were parts of the cracked continent. In theory, there could be more than one, or do we just like one?
I'm always a fan of a third option. So maybe there is a group of she that the she and un-she don't know about.
Okay.
Like, when the world was destroyed, they got, like, a subsection of... Ooh, it is a subsection of both. So she and un-she that got placed in this place together, and they actually mated. And have, like, created a race that combines the she and the un-she.
Ooh, they're the Twilight Fae.
Yeah, they're the Twilight Fae. They're not neither the Fae of the Light or the Dark. They're the Twilight.
No. They are the... a play on Equinox. Not Sequinox. Equinox.
Can't call it the Sequinox.
that hurts a little, Alan. Twilight might be the best name, maybe. I was looking for something seasonal, but...
Well...
Or, now, this might be weird, but if we have she and un-she, could this be bi-she? That sounds weird.
True she, but spelled with a T-R-U. T-R-U... Blah, blah.
That feels very presumptuous of them, which I kind of like.
Yeah. Like, they call themselves the true she. And like once the she and un-she find out about them, they could call them the anti-she.
The non-she.
Or the non-she.
I like that a lot. Okay, let's do that. So then are they on chunks that are on opposite side of the planet? So they rarely ever cross paths?
Very much so. But I also like the idea that like, no, never mind. Scratch that. Because I always do like to have like one group that knows more than the rest of the planet, but I don't think that necessarily works in dark fantasy.
No, everyone's kind of got to be on the same level.
Yeah, it has to be an even playing field-ish.
Yeah, like by default, I think the werewolves and the humans are going to be a little bit ahead of the curve, and the she, un-she, and true-she are so removed that they're not really super relevant to the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of boils down to where the humans... Oh, man. Alan, I think the humans and werewolves are at war.
It's the only thing that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, no. I think that's the only logical path left to us here, is that they have to be at war.
Yeah. Okay, fine.
And that's our time limit.
Nice. That was rather fortuitous timing.
Yes. All right, so that's the first of our four episodes on this dark fantasy aerial world. I dig it, Alan. I like where we're going with this.
So far, so good. I really do like where we're going with this.
Okay. Well, I guess come back next week for part two. And man, if you're liking what we're doing here, if you have some thoughts or ideas, bounce them over to us.
For sure. And if you have any questions, comments, concerns, please reach out to us. That'll all be in the bumper. But yeah, keep on forging.
Bye. You can find Alan at Alan_Sells on Twitter. You can find Matt at Matt Hoadley on Twitter. You can reach the show at Forging_Worlds or by emailing us, forgingworlds@fifthdraw.com. This show and the rest of the Fifth Draw family of shows can be found at fifthdraw.com. Forging Worlds is presented under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 4.0 International License. For more information, please visit creativecommons.org.